And welcome back. This is Daily Buddhism Audio Show number 33. My name is Brian Shell, and I'm your host for the show. You can find the text, as well as all links mentioned in this program and all past episodes, on the website at www.dailybuddhism.com. Send your questions, comments, suggestions, and thoughts to me at dailybuddhism@gmail.com. And there are no special announcements for this week, so let's get right on with this week's show. And we started off the week with a question. Reader wrote in, "One thing that I find both off-putting and frustrating about what I see as Buddhism in America is that it seems almost elitist. People go on and on about the importance of retreat. While I have no doubt about the importance of a retreat to truly give the mind some space to develop, it cannot be feasible for all people. Even in the places where Buddhism is the norm, not everyone is a monk. My question is this. How do the lay people in places where people are primarily Buddhist practice Buddhism in their lives in a practical way? What do you think Buddhism can be in a Western society for everyday people? This is something that has been bothering me for some time, and I appreciate anything you have to say about the matter." And my answer. Specifically addressing retreats, keep in mind that many of the people advocating retreats are the people taking money to lead retreats. Buddhism has become like everything else in the West, highly commercialized. Even the monks and the teachers need to make money, and hosting a retreat is where many of the big-name Buddhists make their living. Now, there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but always look into a teacher's motives when they recommend something. That being said, real Eastern monks do in fact go on retreats themselves occasionally. Master Sheng Yen, in the book Footprints in the Snow that I reviewed a few weeks ago, went on a solitary retreat for 6 years once. One long retreat during his lifetime, not for a week every 6 months. As far as the rest of your question is concerned, I think the primary difference is that in the West, we see Buddhism as a religion. It's something that you choose to do, and it's an important, life-changing choice. In the East, however, they don't really think about it. It's just there. While I was in Japan, once in a while someone would ask me about my religion. And when I answered that I was a Buddhist, the answer was invariably, "What is that?" When I explained about following the teachings of Buddha, the answer was just about always an unexcited, "Oh, that. Yes, me too." It's just part of their lives, something ingrained in them. It's not a choice. It's not an activity. They don't do Buddhism. They just live it. I've got a story about a dog that I'll tell a little later. It shows just how ingrained those ideas are. I think it's basically a lot like Christians in America that don't read the Bible much and they don't go to church. Christianity is there, and they believe in it, and they know all about it. It's part of their identity, yet it's not actively important to their day-to-day lives. I'm not talking about hypocrisy. It's just more of their background. I don't think Buddhism is going to have that kind of background power in the West, at least not for several more generations at least. In the meantime, Buddhism will gain new converts who are excited about this exotic new thing, and they'll eagerly go off to retreats, buy Buddhist books, rent Buddhist videos, and so forth. It's new, and it all has to be learned and explored. Unlike those in the East who just sort of became Buddhist naturally, never having read a book on Buddhism in their entire lives. Hopefully, those excited new Western converts will stick around and learn to live by the precepts, follow the path, and reduce suffering where they see it, instead of just going off to a retreat every 6 months. If this sounds negative, I don't mean it that way. It's just a case of new converts discovering a new way of looking at the universe, as opposed to lifelong Buddhists who say, "Oh, that. Yes, me too." In the previous segment, I mentioned just how ingrained some of the ideas of Buddhism are in the East. And here's a little story that I think exemplifies the differences and just how deep they go. One day in Japan, I had the afternoon off and was watching TV. My Japanese language was a little bit limited, so TV was always a challenge. But once in a while, I found a story I could follow. That afternoon, I tuned into a children's movie about a dog. I turned it on in the middle, and I assumed the dog had gone on various adventures that I had missed. But at the point of the story where I started watching, he was going to one of those schools that teach dogs how to assist blind people. And upon the dog's graduation, he was assigned to a nice old man who was blind. The dog and the old man lived together several years, and they loved each other very much. Now here you can cue the happy master and dog montage. Then the old man suddenly died. The dog missed his master and went to live with a younger couple who took care of the now aging dog. The dog, too, grew sicker, finally having an accident that left him on his own deathbed. The old dog laid there on his bed, surrounded by his new family, all in tears. The camera looked down on the scene from above. The dog's breathing grew shallower and shallower. The camera started to go dark. The dog's eyes closed, and the camera faded to black. The heroic star of the movie, the dog, was dead. Yes, I was sniffling too by that time, but that's not the point. Okay, so far there's nothing there that we all haven't seen before in a tearjerker dog movie, right? But what do you suppose came next? With my Western background, I absolutely expected to see the camera fade back in to a new scene with the dog, now in a cloudy realm. The dog would look over and see his old master, no longer blind, and probably a lot younger, too. After a joyous reunion, the two would walk off into the mist together, a happy ending after all. Does that seem like a normal story ending to you? Here in the West, that's probably how it would have ended. But not this time. Instead, the camera faded into a blurry scene with lots of fuzzy action. The image clears, and we see a batch of newborn puppies, just minutes old, drinking milk from their mother. The camera zooms in on one of the puppies, who we now realize is the reincarnation of our former hero dog, ready to start some new adventures. The end. Well, that just blew me away at the time. For Japanese, reincarnation and rebirth is every bit as accepted and natural as someone in the West going to heaven. Now, I'm not saying they all believe it, any more than all Westerners believe in heaven, but they all accept it as part of their culture to the extent that it's in a children's dog movie and doesn't require any explanation whatsoever. Reincarnation is possibly the toughest part of Buddhism for Westerners to really accept, and here it was, just an accepted part of children's television. And then we had another reader question. I'm reading your introduction to the Eightfold Path. I'm a little lost with right effort, step 6. Do you go more fully into the four major actions in any other podcast that I just haven't found yet? And my answer was, no, not yet, but now's a good time to do it. Right effort is one step of the Eightfold Path. Way back in April, I explained that right effort consists of four major actions that a Buddhist should attempt at all times. First, make an effort to prevent the creation of unwholesome states. Second, make an effort to abandon pre-existing unwholesome states. Third, make an effort to encourage wholesome states. And fourth, make an effort to maintain pre-existing wholesome states. Maybe we're a little more advanced now, so let's look at the actual words the Buddha spoke and see if the original wording will make that any clearer. What the Buddha actually said was, 1. There is the case where a monk generates desire, endeavors, activates persistence, upholds and exerts his intent for the sake of non-arising of evil, unskillful qualities that have not yet arisen. 2. He generates desire, endeavors, activates persistence, upholds and exerts his intent for the sake of the abandonment of evil, unskillful qualities that have arisen. 3. He generates desire, endeavors, activates persistence, upholds and exerts his intent for the sake of the arising of skillful qualities that have not yet arisen. And 4. He generates desire, endeavors, activates persistence, upholds and exerts his intent for the maintenance, non-confusion, increase, plenitude, development, and culmination of skillful qualities that have arisen. This, monks, is called right effort. And this quote is from the Magga Vibhanga Sutta, which I will include in full this week in the Weekly Buddhism number 8. So, right effort is, in essence, mental energy directed towards something which can be either good or bad. The four steps above explain the most productive way to focus those mental energies. I've seen it explained that the best way to test yourself as to whether or not you have been applying right effort is to simply ask yourself, have I really tried today? Have I pushed myself to my limit, or did I take it easy today? Have you tried today? And I'm recording this episode on the Friday after Thanksgiving here in the United States, also called Black Friday. Today begins that time of year when everyone and his brother wants you to buy something or send the money. And I'm not going to be the exception to that either. I'm as uncomfortable asking for money as you probably are in sending it, so I'm only going to do this just this one time during the holiday season. So here's a letter I sent out a couple of days ago to my email subscribers. Good morning. I hope you're enjoying the Daily Buddhism. I know I have a lot of fun writing it. From the letters I get, I know a lot of you are learning from it, and I'm thrilled to be able to help. Not only do I enjoy it immensely, but due to the state of the economy here in Dayton, it's quickly changed from a simple hobby to my livelihood. I especially like doing the questions and answers, since I never know what to expect. But my second favorite part of the site is the book review section. I have to continually be reading something, which keeps me learning new ways of teaching the Dharma, as well as giving me new ideas for topics to discuss here. As you've probably noticed, I usually include a link to buy the book from Amazon somewhere in the review. Yes, I do get a little commission if you buy the book through one of those links. It's not much, but every little bit helps. The past few years, I've done the majority of my gift shopping through Amazon, and if you do too, then this could be a painlessly easy way to help support the Daily Buddhism at the same time. Are you planning on buying any of your holiday gifts from Amazon this year? Not necessarily something that I've recommended, but anything. If you are, then please use the Daily Buddhism's affiliate link to do so. Just go to www.dailybuddhism.com and find the Support the Daily Buddhism by Purchasing from Amazon image on the upper right-hand side of the page. Just click on the graphic to Amazon and order whatever you want, whether it be electronics, DVDs, shoes, CDs, gift cards, or even books. If you go through my link, anything you buy will count. There's also a copy of the Amazon affiliate link in the show notes for this episode. And I'll also point out that the Weekly Buddhism PDF magazine is available for subscription, and it'll be continuing for a long time to come. But it's not too late to subscribe now and get all the back issues before it gets tough to catch up later. I did change the subscription options last week, and now if you want to use the Donate $5 a Month button on the site, you'll get free issues for as long as the donations continue. That's only $5 a month. Of course, you could always ask Santa for a regular subscription. And of course, the final option for supporting the site is, of course, just a simple donation. The buttons for that are on the main page of the site. So if you've learned something that has helped you, or even just entertained you, now is a good time to give back. If you've learned something, your support will help others learn too. And of course, if you've already donated in the past, thank you very much for your support. And then next up, one of those very same book reviews. This week I'm talking about the book, Where is Your Buddha Nature? Stories to Instruct and Inspire, by the Venerable Master Sing Yin. The publisher is Buddha's Light Publishing. It's 156 pages, and yes, there is an Amazon link. This short paperback is a collection of dozens of very short stories, which, as the title suggests, instruct and inspire. Master Sing Yin was the abbot at Fo Guang Shen, the largest Buddhist monastery in Taiwan. But he's also been involved with many other organizations. Over his long career, he's met many people and picked up many interesting experiences and stories along the way, some of which he recounts here. This is not a biography, but you can definitely get a sense of what this master believes just by the way he tells the stories. He teaches humanistic Buddhism, that we should practice Buddhism in our daily lives, living our lives the Buddhist way. The stories are broken up into 8 chapters. Stories about Buddha, stories about Chan masters, stories about people, stories about devotees, stories about himself, stories about disciples, stories about animals, stories about monastics. And there's also a brief glossary of useful terms at the end. His writing style is clear and simple, and many of the stories are simple, heartwarming tales of compassion and loyalty. Here's one of the stories from the book. It's not one of the more touching ones, but it resounded with me since I could have written the same story myself. Yes, this exact same thing happened to me just about a year ago. And the story is called Kindness, from page 97 and 98 of the book. Several years ago, a group of us traveled to Japan. We got off a train in Tokyo and went outside to look for the bus we needed to take. We climbed on what we thought was the right bus, but after speaking with the driver, we learned that it was not. The driver said, "This bus won't take you where you need to go. You need to go around the corner over there and down the street to find the bus you want." This was our first trip to Japan, so none of us knew where the driver was telling us to go. We felt quite lost, but there was nothing else to do but get off the bus and try to fend for ourselves. We thanked the driver and went outside. Our confusion must have shown on our faces, because in a moment, the driver turned to the people already sitting in the bus and said, "I'm very sorry, but I have to show these people where to catch their bus. Please wait a moment for me. I'll be right back." Then he turned off the engine of the bus, pulled out the keys, and jumped down to the street. He guided us along a confusing route for about 5 minutes until we arrived at the correct stop. A few years later, I went to Japan again to teach the Dharma. After one of my talks, a young man came up to me to say hello. He was quite excited as he said, "You couldn't possibly remember me, but I remember you. Can you recall a time a few years ago when you were in Tokyo and a bus driver shut off his engine to walk you to your stop? I was one of the passengers on that bus." "Oh," I said, "I'm sorry we made all of you wait so long." "Oh no," the young man said, "don't say that. This is a deeply Buddhist country, and we all understand the importance of helping others." "Can you guess what happened when the driver came back to the bus?" he continued. "As soon as he came back in the door, everyone on the bus started clapping their hands in approval." And for the most part, all the stories in the book are about this length. There's nothing complex here at all. These are simple, real-world stories that Master Sing Yin has lived or experienced himself. If you want to be inspired, or just want to read about the compassion and kindness of others, then pick this one up. I definitely recommend this book. And then we wrap up this week with another koan. This one is called Not Far From Buddhahood. A university student, while visiting Gasan, asked him, "Have you ever read the Christian Bible?" "No, read it to me," said Gasan. The student opened the Bible and read from St. Matthew. "And why take ye thought for raiment? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They toil not, neither do they spin. And yet I say unto you that even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. Take therefore no thought for the morrow shall take the thought for the things of itself." Gasan said, "Whoever uttered those words, I consider an enlightened man." The student continued, reading, "Ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. For everyone that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened." And Gasan remarked, "That is excellent. Whoever said that is not far from Buddhahood." And that wraps up another week. Send in your questions by email to dailybuddhism@gmail.com or phone them in at 937-660-4949 or post them in the comment section of any individual blog post. As mentioned already, the Daily Buddhism runs primarily from your donations, and there are a couple of donation buttons on the site as well, one for a one-time donation, the other for a monthly contribution. If you use the recurring donation button or send in a one-time donation of $50 or more, you get a free subscription to the weekly Buddhism PDF magazine. You're free to send in more or less than this, of course, if you choose. Plenty of people just send in $5 or $10, and that's fine. Everything helps. Until then, see you next week. Stop by the website and look around. Take some time to meditate. See you next week.